Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
So, Sal DeMasi's fate will rest in the hands of a jury of his peers. But when you consider the actions of some of his political peers, it makes you wonder what is going on at the State House.
DeMasi is the third Massachusetts House Speaker in a row to be indicted. A former state senator is now in prison for accepting a bribe. A massive corruption scandal sent three other state senators to jail back in the 70s. And the list goes on. Some would say all the way back to the granddaddy of them all, to former Boston Mayor James Michael Curley, who in 1947 had to serve out part of his term in office while in jail, and then went on to title his autobiography, I'll Do It Again.
Pretty cheeky. But does the spirit of Curley lurk in the modern-day culture of Beacon Hill? Pay to play at the State House and what to do about it. That's today's talker. So listeners, does business as usual on Beacon Hill smell a little funny to you? Or did the major ethics reform law passed 2 years ago give you more confidence in our political representatives? Is the problem just in Massachusetts? Or maybe is it a bigger one, that money and politics in general don't make such a good mix? If so, will strengthening ethics regulations be enough? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We want to hear from you. Well, joining us now is Massachusetts State Senator Jamie Eldridge. He represents the Middlesex and Worcester District up in Beacon Hill. Senator Eldridge, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you back. Also with us is Pam Wilmot. She's Executive Director of Massachusetts Common Cause. Pam Wilmot, welcome back to you as well.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Senator Eldridge, let me start with you. You've actually sponsored legislation that would seek to eliminate so-called pay-to-play opportunities on Beacon Hill. I want to get to that in detail in just a moment. But before that, could you just explain to us how you describe the culture of Beacon Hill and pay-to-play? What do you think is going on?
Yes, well, first of all, I do believe that the vast majority of legislators on Beacon Hill are honest. I think what I'm trying to get at is changing the culture. And the problem is now is that with different pieces of legislation filed, there is an expectation, unfortunately, that from members of the public and for those who are doing business with the state, that in order to get certain legislation filed or perhaps a line item or an earmark, that it helps if a donation is made or if the lobbyist of that entity is helping raise money for a candidate. So my bill, by prohibiting those kind of activities, is looking to change the culture and also sort of restore the public's faith in elected officials.
So, Senator, I'm sorry to interrupt, Senator Eldridge. I just want to be clear. So it's when we say the culture of Beacon Hill, what we're really getting to is that the expectation, as you said, that money is going to help maybe get certain bills or interests advanced on Beacon Hill. And the expectation is on both sides, that of people who outside of Beacon Hill and of, as you said, some maybe representatives or senators themselves?
Absolutely, and you saw that with the probation scandal, where certain people who either wanted to get a probation job or secured one were turning around and making a very large donation. And I think, you know, there's different reasons for why people are doing that, but part of it is I think there's an expectation of that, and I'm looking to eliminate that expectation and focus more on the public interest.
Okay, so just take us through the bill then. How would you eliminate what seems to be a pretty deeply ingrained part of Beacon Hill culture?
The bill has a number of parts, but the two key pieces are, first, prohibiting any lobbyist from soliciting, from raising campaign contributions from any legislative or statewide candidate, and the second is prohibiting the principals, the key officers of any state contractors that have business with the state, and from soliciting contributions from anyone for statewide or legislative candidates.
Okay. And then, so that's in terms of raising money for politicians. How does the bill go further than that?
Well, it has a couple of other provisions just further defining what a candidate or elected official can use campaign funds for, to make sure they're not using it for things that are strictly for personal use. But again, the main focus is banning lobbyists and state contractors from raising money or making donations to elected officials or candidates for public office.
Okay. Pam Wilmot, lots to talk about here in terms of the culture and the history of how Massachusetts got to the place that we find ourselves in now, whether it's, you know, worse or maybe not as worse as we've seen before. But I just want to get your first response, your thought on Senator Eldridge's proposed bill here.
Absolutely something that we support. We've been working with the senator on this bill. Pay-to-play legislation is one piece of the puzzle. And frankly, there's a lot of pieces that we think should go forward, including public financing of elections, which provides a source of funding from small donations that go directly to the to a fund that is then given to candidates. So it doesn't go through private big dollar contributions. It comes directly from the public. And we think that that's critical because politicians do need money to get elected. And frankly, right now, the main source of funding, particularly as you go up the political ladder, is from special interests like lobbyists and contractors. And that's just not a good marriage. As you mentioned in your introduction, money and politics don't make for good public interest.
But as you said, it's definitely part of the equation in terms of what politicians need to get elected in the first place.
Absolutely.
Senator Eldridge, how has your bill been, what's been the response from your colleagues for your bill here?
Well, there's been some support, but this was a bill that I filed last session, and obviously it didn't pass. I think one of the challenges is convincing my colleagues, legislators in general, that because of the culture that exists and what people think of the State House, it causes a tainted view of the vastly good work that we do, and that in order to get more done, more legislation in the public interest, if we pass this kind of legislation, it would not only be good for the public interest, but it would also be good for legislators themselves. But obviously the bill hasn't passed yet, and I had to refile it this session.
And I have to say, we must sympathize with the hardworking representatives and state senators who are doing their best to operate within what seems to be, Pam Wilmot, just kind of this culture which lends itself to leadership, at least. I'm thinking of the three House speakers who've been indicted, setting not such a great example, as Senator Eldridge is saying.
I would emphasize, and I somebody that has been working on these issues for many years, I think the good news is that the vast majority of public officials are really doing it for the right reasons and are doing great work. And we don't hear about that.
Right.
We hear about when people fall and fail. And, that it's shocking, frankly, and it's rare. I mean, it does happen. We've seen it. But let's not lump these all together.
But
the two other speakers, particularly Finneran, was indicted and ultimately pled to obstruction of justice, perjury, lying, not from corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two very different things, even though, I certainly don't support it. In fact, I helped push that investigation a little bit. But they really are different things.
But Pam, I guess what I was getting at is Senator Eldridge, I feel like he used the right word, is the taint is hard to escape. When these high-profile cases seem to be constantly in the air in Massachusetts. So he's trying to get at the sort of campaign finance,
yes,
at least part of the puzzle. When it comes to the culture overall on Beacon Hill, at Common Cause, what are the other areas that you've seen are of concern when it comes to money and politics and pay to play?
Well, that's pay to play is really about campaign finance. Clearly, what is alleged here is actually an ethics violation. There was a lot of laws that were strengthened in that area. The bill that was passed was a very good one. But we're in a trial here because laws were alleged to be broken. And that means there are laws on the books. Frankly, some other things to block problems are openness in government, more transparency, more open meetings, public records protections, particularly in all sorts of different areas.
Mm-hmm.
Pay to play is a big piece. And also, as I mentioned, public financing.
Well, for those of us who haven't memorized the Massachusetts statutes surrounding ethics in government, just remind us, what are some of the other sort of, in more detail, if you can, the laws that stand in terms of controlling how money influences politics on Beacon
Hill?
Well,
we have pretty strict bidding laws that covers many different things. There are some areas I'd like to see tightened there. There are rules that public officials cannot take anything of substantial value, and that's over $50 from anyone. That isn't, you know, as a gift. So that is also a very strict standard. We tightened that last year. So this is federal law. It's somewhat different that this speaker is being indicted on. But one of the things you mentioned also in the intro is lobbyists are not allowed to get money for succeeding in their passing their bills. And that's one of the things I think we should also look at is in terms of our commissions for government contracts, because I think you see a lot of issues there, having such huge amounts of money going to salesmen for procuring contracts. It's frankly, I think, a real incentive for illegal action.
Senator Eldridge, in listening to all the laws that already exist on the books, the way Pam Wilmot describes it, they seem to be pretty robust, and that if a politician were to follow all the laws to their letter, there really wouldn't be a problem. And do you see that to be the case, that what we have is good enough? It's just that we maybe have a few outlier representatives and senators who turn a blind eye to them?
Well, I think we certainly have strong ethics and campaign finance laws. Unfortunately, they don't go far enough. And I think what we have in Massachusetts, probably like almost every other state, is in many ways sort of a system of legalized bribery, is that you know that if you file a bill that's going to upset the development community or the computer industry or the bottled water industry, is that you know that there are lobbyists on that side that are able pretty easily to raise a fair amount of money to express their opposition to other legislators about that bill. And we've seen over the past years that a lot of strong consumer protection-oriented legislation hasn't passed. And I would just say that I think there's a connection between that and those sorts of corporate lobbyists being able to raise money and send a signal to legislators that it's not in your interest to support this legislation.
And I agree with Senator Eldridge. I think we do have strong laws on the books, but particularly in the campaign finance area, we have a lot to go. We have good disclosure laws. We have strict contribution limits, but there's lots of ways around them. And Senator Eldridge's two bills, the pay-to-play bill and the public financing bill, will essentially cut all those avenues off.
Mm. Listeners, we are talking about the pay-to-play atmosphere on Beacon Hill, money and politics and state government. What's your thought about what you're hearing here? Do we have enough laws on the books as it is to promote good ethical behavior amongst our elected officials, or do we need a strengthening of those laws? The way you hear Senator Eldridge describe how lobbyists do have influence on Beacon Hill, is any law going to be good enough for as long as money talks as loud as it does? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. Talk. Pam Wilmot, a lot of this sort of came up again a couple years ago that led to the pretty substantial ethics reform on Beacon Hill. Governor Patrick signed it. Remind us what the ethics reform package did, and it seems like that should have been, you know, the latest push that we had to kind of get things on the straight and narrow in Beacon Hill, and yet still it wasn't enough. But first, remind us what the ethics reform legislation did.
Well, it strengthened penalties across the board. Bribery was raised from $5,000 to $100,000. It gave more enforcement authority to the Ethics Commission. It added a lot more sunshine to our campaign finance laws in terms of disclosure. It strengthened the enforcement of the open meetings law. It encouraged more people, in fact, required more people to register as lobbyists and gave more authority there to enforce that law. It was very comprehensive. It was done in a short period of time. Did it go as far as Senator Eldridge and I would like it to go? No, it didn't. But that doesn't take away from what was actually passed. It was there's a summary on our website. It was a very long bill. Good bill.
Senator Eldridge, I wonder if you could sort of take us into a day in the life of a state senator here and describe to me, if you could, like, do you have lobbyists who just sort of knock on your office door and say, I need to have a chance to meet with you? Or pull back the curtain and describe to me, what is it like? What kind of pressure are you under from these people walking around Beacon Hill?
Sure. Well, certainly there, and when there are lobbyists, I mean, there are lobbyists for human services, there's lobbyists for environmental protection, and yes, there are also lobbyists for corporate interests. So, you know, all of those different advocates, you know, usually by appointment, but sometimes they'll try to stop by during the day to express their concern about a particular bill. So, for example, there's a discussion right now about repealing the gift ban for pharmaceutical companies to provide dinner or other gifts to doctors. So those, the lobbyists for Big Pharma have come to my office to express their support for the repeal of that ban. I happen to support the ban, but I know that those companies and their lobbyists have the ability, again, fairly quickly, to raise a fair amount of money for or perhaps against me. And when I'm having those meetings, that's something that, you know, myself and I think any legislator is knowledgeable about, because you see it in the campaign finance statements of all of us.
Mm.
So that's, you know, that's the sort of kind of meeting that can happen where obviously the focus is just on the substance of the issue and why something is good or bad. But obviously, given the system we have of how we all raise money, we know in our heads that lobbyist has the ability to raise money for us, against us, or for other candidates.
Pam Wilmot with Common Cause, and we're sort of bouncing back and forth between these parallel but overlapping worlds of actually what can be, you know, sort of done legally and the whole world of ethics. I recognize that there is overlap, but they, some areas where they don't. But even regarding this ethics reform bill that passed a couple of years ago, I mean, there was reporting very recently that there's a difference between the what was aspired to in the bill versus what's actually being executed in terms of the financial disclosure forms, for example, that state representatives have to fill out that actually say, you know, here's what my house is worth, et cetera. Those forms haven't been updated in some three decades.
That's right.
So it asks for information such as you don't have to report if your house is worth more than $100,000, let's say.
That's right. The categories stop at $100,000 because it was written in 1978 when that was a lot more money than it is today. That is one area that probably could have been included in the bill and wasn't. It was done in a very short period of time, but that doesn't diminish what was actually done in that law. Yes, there's plenty of things. For example, one other way that special interests use to advocate for their positions in addition to money is hiring high-level former elected officials who have those relationships to go in and to make those cases. So that's revolving door. That's another potential way where influence is getting into the system. But frankly, I think campaign finance is our biggest mm-hmm. area right now to address. We've done a lot on ethics. We've done a lot on lobbying. Also, openness in government and having more rules around transparency and requirements for open meetings, which we have at the local level, but we don't have in the legislature or in some other areas.
We've got a lot of calls who want to join us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's first go to Van, who's calling from Dorchester. You're on the air, Van.
Hey, just in the interest of disclosure, I'm a professional political fundraising consultant and have been one for the last 30 years. I think the premise of today's discussion talks about money as if it's an evil in campaigns, and I think that your premise is incorrect because without money, you wouldn't have communications with voters. It costs money to run campaigns, and it costs money to communicate your message to voters. If you take money out of the message or out of campaigns, you'll start not communicating with voters whatsoever.
Mm.
Second, I think that what you're seeing here out of the billions and literally billions of dollars that are raised in political campaigns, you see some people going to jail because they are corrupt. Our laws are actually working. I would argue the fact that Representative DeMacy is up on trial is a case in point. The system works. If someone is corrupt, allegedly corrupt in this instance, the system works, and we have a judicial process and laws that we can enforce. But to take money out of campaigns, you're basically crippling and handicapping your candidates who want to communicate to the voters their message on what reforms they'd like to see placed.
Van, stick with us for just a second. Let me get a response to your thought from Pam Wilmot.
It is true that you'd have to be able to communicate with voters, and that takes money. And our argument is that we want it from small-dollar citizen, average people contributions plus some matching funds from the state, and not from large-dollar corporate interests or from lobbyists who can solicit that money from their clients.
Van, what would you suggest?
Hold on. Just a second. Massachusetts law is a $500 maximum limit, which actually handicaps your challengers, because the challengers aren't going to be able to get contributions from a lot of people because they're not well known. So by passing that type of campaign finance reform, you're actually handicapping the challengers.
Then but you that's say, why well, we need public finance. And that's the goal that I've
I'm glad you mentioned that, Senator. Let's see you, a senator, let's see anybody pass legislation which would have to increase taxes in order to pay for political campaigns. Where are you going to get the money to finance a public effort? The public
I filed that bill, and it would save money.
Van, I'm sorry to cut you off here, but I think you make a bunch of great points, and I want to let Senator Eldridge respond in more detail. Thank you so much for your call. Senator Eldridge, I think Van does make a point. I mean, with the cost of elections being what they are, could we raise anywhere near the amount publicly to have a modern-day, even statewide election?
Oh, absolutely. And when I first ran for state representative, I ran as a publicly financed clean elections candidate under the voter-approved referendum and was publicly funded. And by everybody being publicly funded in Massachusetts, I would argue it would save literally millions, if not tens of millions of dollars, because some of the special earmarks, some of the anti-consumer protection legislation that passes because of our current finance system is far more costly than a public finance system. And if we instituted that, it would not only save money, it would take very little to ally in order to provide for legislative and statewide candidates to run.
Let's take another call from Acton. Tara's on the line. Welcome to Radio Boston, Tara.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. What's your thought?
I called first to talk about the difference between laws, ethics, guidelines, because I feel like we tangle ourselves up with laws that then we see a lot of people spend a lot of money and time trying to avert or go around the laws.
Right, you can behave badly. You can behave badly, but still be legal.
Like Edwards, if it was legal, so if we spent more time on guidelines and disclosure, that the voters would be able to make up their mind easier, because they're out working 2-3 jobs, and it's very difficult for them to figure out that the guy who lists himself as the housing advocate is really a highly paid director of a nonprofit paid for by his own profit-making multi-million dollar operation. And so the voters, it's very difficult to figure this out. And sometimes it takes years before you figure it out, but the election's over.
Tara, thank you go ahead.
Well, and then we moved on to, the whole $500 thing, because you take people who have $2,500, say. They call up all their friends and they say, hey, if I give you $500, can you give this other guy $500? Mm-hmm. And that happens all the time. So you have these folks that get experts at ways of getting around the law.
Tara, thank you so much for your call. And Pam Wilmot and Senator Jamie Eldridge, I think Tara brings up exactly the point that doesn't sit very easily with so many people, that we can write as much legislation as we want, but it's just really hard to say clearly this is ethical behavior, this is not ethical behavior. Or is it? I mean, there's a gray area here that's tough to regulate.
There always is.
It's really difficult. I would say, though, I mean, I think looking back at the scandals that happened in the Massachusetts legislature in the 1960s and 70s with things like public construction, I mean, I think that because of the guidelines and laws we've had, I think we have a much more honest legislature now than existed decades ago. But I guess the point is what is overriding that is the current status quo campaign finance system. And we can do more transparency. I think my concern about that is that at the end of the day, the public has a difficult time sorting all that out and figuring out who's on the right side and who's the wrong side. And that's why I do think things like public financing of campaigns ultimately is the best solution to cleaning up the system in improving the perception that people have of the legislature.
Pam Wilmot, I mean, I do have to say, I wonder how realistic it is to eventually, even the thought of us moving towards a totally publicly financed system of elections in Massachusetts. I have to say, I feel a little cynical about that.
Well, voters passed it by 67% once upon a time. It doesn't mean they couldn't do it again. Is it going to happen next year? No. I think ultimately we will go in that direction, just like other democracies in the world have. Because it's
even with things like the Supreme Court Citizens United case, I mean, which a lot of people say it's flooding in a lot more money into the system now as well.
That is true. There are problems that the Supreme Court has created that work around what we're trying to do.
I probably shouldn't have brought that up at the last second here like that. But you can't really separate the federal from the state level on matters of election. Pam Wilmot, Executive Director of Massachusetts Common Cause, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Senator Jamie Eldredge, who represents the Middlesex and Worcester districts, thank you so much for your time as well.
Thank you very much.
Stay with us, everyone, because coming up next, a retired Massachusetts judge remembers his work in the early days of the civil rights movement, trying to secure voting rights for African Americans in Mississippi. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.